specifically about recording, because we know that even if you call into, let's say, Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, they tell you the conversation is recorded for training purposes, right? But how about an actual client's virtual environment, like what we are now is being recorded? What would you recommend people to do in terms of, one, address the actual security of the security side of the confidentiality? Two is the recording aspect.
So I'll hit the easier one first, I think, in my opinion. That's the recording side of it. Again, a lot of this goes back to whose oversight do you fall under, right? From a FINRA standpoint or from an SEC standpoint or a state standpoint. And so I don't have good answers from the FINRA standpoint because we fall under the SEC or fall under the state there. But I think it is just really having a conversation. You know, it is a changing environment. And I think we even saw it at the beginning of the pandemic where some security breaches occurred. And so it is a constant conversation in proactively looking for potential security issues and then making sure that we're addressing them here. And so on Zoom, right? Are you locking your meeting? Are you, you know, making sure that the client's aware of what is happening and just then being secure from that standpoint? Using VPNs, using our virtual private networks, using secure file shares and the like is important. Just being proactive in that and thinking about where those types of situations could come up.
Yeah, I think that it's always always good to have certain best practices in place to address these technology concerns, because clients obviously are going to ask those questions, and you want to be as prepared as possible for the firm as well. So now that we are into the best practice, and share with us some of the in the virtual environment, some of the best practices that we could all benefit from.
Yeah, so I think it starts out with equipment. You know, you have to look at the client's experience from their side. And so one of the things that I have personally seen is in the beginning when we first started it, it was very awkward to get the conversation started because I had always done my meetings in person. And so it was easy to have a picture of your family on your desk or doing something like that. And so one thing that I say is have a conversational background. And so you can see I have a collection of dirty game used memorabilia there. That is intentional because in Houston, you know, we have the conversations about baseball and just interests. And then that spurs on other conversations to make the conversation much more personable. You have to make sure that lighting is good. Your camera is good. Your internet is good. All of those types of things are there. And then presenting with confidence in that meeting, whether it's your first time or your thousandth time doing a virtual financial planning session, the client needs to feel like you're the expert and that you're bringing value to them and that they understand that value that you're bringing. And then systems and processes, you know, regardless of whether it's in person or face to face, in person or virtual, the client wants to feel like you are walking them through a process and it's not just pieced together. And so you have to take the process that you were using in person and adapt that to a virtual setting so that they have a comfort level like, yes, we are walking on a path towards financial planning. I always show the client a sample end product of a financial plan so that they know the process that we're going to walk through and why it takes so long for us to do this because we have to get it right. And from a retirement planning standpoint, it's not something that we can speed up or take lightly. And then, of course, finishing out with value, look for ways to bring additional value, whether that is through new technology, whether that is through services operated by the custodian. There are other ways to help the client there. And then even, you know, offering video updates and just interacting from a video standpoint with happy birthday messages, client reminders. You know, there's some very creative ways to show the client how much you value them, how much you care, and the level of expertise that you bring to the table.
And I think that you're right. In the virtual environment, you know, starting from the equipment side, I've noticed a lot of the advisors very much like you that has their background Some I've seen lots of female advisors, if you will, they have all family pictures in the background. So it's really, you do have to kind of stage that similar to how you stage your office in your office environment. So other than the cameras and the equipment and stuff, I also noticed a couple of things where clients oftentimes, if they're not familiar with the computer, especially older clients, iPhone works well. Cell phone actually works really, really well in terms of the quality of the image and things like that. But there's one thing that I do wanted to kind of suggest to whoever is listening is having a power surge. I don't know if it's called power surge, but anyway, you plug in your protector, surge protector, if you will. But the one that I have is actually has at least 12 minutes of batteries in there in case of the power outage. That's important because it will be very embarrassing if you got cut off in the middle of the conversation with the 10, 12 minutes that I have in the battery. It will allow me to swing back to another bigger batteries, if you will, that at least I can still swing back to the meeting. Right. And we learn, you know, we learn through these virtual practice, not only staging your room, having the right equipment in place, but also at the same time, understanding clients may have trouble using computer, but cell phone works perfectly well. And the image coming in from cell phone actually works sometimes better than those who doesn't necessarily have a good camera in there. I wanted to talk a little bit about confidence. A lot of people will ask me about how do you present yourself confidently through the lens of the camera versus through the in-person type of conversation. What would you recommend?
So I think it is just being natural in front of the camera. It's practicing and it's working with other advisors. And so I think if somebody would feel like they have a lack of confidence there, I think it is certainly acceptable, just like we've probably done both of us in a regular setting where a senior advisor would come in. I've participated in other meetings with junior advisors and sat in there, and clients are perfectly comfortable with that as long as they know who you are and what you're doing there. And it's told to them prior to them coming on the call, but it is just the confidence piece of it and then practicing so that, you know, like we use some presentations and some drawings and things like that, and using it in a way that is smooth so that the client gets the appearance that you know exactly what you're doing, even if you aren't fully confident in that.
Well, just like any sports, that you are very big in sports, practice always works, right? And I remember early on in my days entering in the industry, I had study group. I have a group of advisors that I work with. We did nothing but practice, just to make sure that we present ourselves professionally and come across confidence and knowing that we have the system and process in our backbone. We know what to do. It's just more of presenting yourself in a way that you are comfortable and the clients are comfortable opening up with you and trust you over the entire process. I wanted to jump to the value piece a little bit. You mentioned about having technology automating the birthday, the reminders and things like that. I know that the big box stores such as Fidelity's and TD's, they any time when you do things, they have automatic message shooting to you. For example, I had to do what they call the group ordering just recently with my sister-in-law for some frozen dumplings, nothing really fancy. And these are the things that you have, as soon as I pay through the bank's Zelle, right, you immediately get confirmation confirming that the things you pay is the right person and things like that. So can you share with us, other than the birthday, the reminders and things like that, what are other things that you would recommend in terms of leveraging those type of technologies?
Sure. So I think one of them is proactively handling some of the conversations. So for example, when you're calling to schedule that appointment there, you know, let's say that I had a referral to me and I'm calling them to set that appointment. It's proactively handling some of those things up front. So you know, asking, are you comfortable with Zoom? Do you have it downloaded on your iPhone? You know, are you going to be using an iPhone, an iPad, a computer? Do you need any help to log in? Because I'm happy to call you 5 minutes before the meeting and help you get on to the camera. And so a lot of this becomes the proactive piece of it. Even having some job aids, you know, we've had a couple situations where people have wanted to meet with us, didn't have Zoom downloaded. And so we have an aid to help them with downloading the apps on their iPhone or iPad. And that's been very helpful. And so it's just a continuous learning process, and then taking those experiences and applying them to the next person and showing that value without necessarily having to state the value, right? You know, instead of telling them, just showing them, here's the value that I can bring, and here's how helpful I'm going to make it for us to do this meeting virtually rather than in person.
Right. And I think that those logistical hurdles oftentimes can be prepared ahead of time to help clients feel comfortable. And the more job aid that you provide, as you mentioned, that also shows the clients how proactive that you are, how systematized that you are working with them. And of course, that we're going to talk about prospecting. I know in the virtual environment, prospecting, I would assume, is going to be a little bit of a different type of art, right? Prospecting in person is different. It takes years of practice and to a certain skill. So walk us through, how could we leverage virtual environment from prospecting perspective?
Yeah, I think one good place to start is LinkedIn. And I think if you connect with other advisors that are doing virtual financial planning, certainly other CFPs and things like that, you know, you want to keep it within the group that we are in, but looking at what they're doing. I think the angle that we have to always take is somebody else is out there doing it better than me, and I need to find out what that better way is. And so I am constantly connecting with other financial planners that are much more experienced in the virtual setting and asking for help, seeing what they're doing, watching their videos, looking on YouTube, and just finding any way to make it better. From a prospecting standpoint, it's still the same structure as you would in a face-to-face setting, in that you have to identify who your target is. And so I put there 7 habits, right? Begin with the end in mind. Who are you trying to reach? Who do you want to serve? And then working backwards into, what is the knowledge gap that is out there, right? Is it a Social Security gap? Is it a Medicare gap? You know, what is out there that you can bring value to? Because I think the days of cold calling and some of those other things that we may have done early in the industry are long gone. And it's now about creating content, valuable content, and attracting clients to you to initiate those conversations a lot more than it was in the past. And with the Facebooks and Twitters and LinkedIns, naturally there's a compliance piece, but once you get past that, it is a great opportunity to reach a lot of people that, again, goes past geography bounds and things like that. And you can access people that will likely want to have a virtual financial planning session with you, especially if they reach out to you. If you're not in Houston and you reach out to me, naturally we are going to have a virtual financial planning meeting. And so it's just a part of it, and adapting from that standpoint.
I know that I know many of the advisors that using YouTube channel as one of those social media platform, if you will. Yeah. Some of my colleagues at TIAA, they actually structure 1 to 2 minutes. Their message is a short 1 to 2 minutes videos out there, using that in the social, circulating in the social media. And you're absolutely right. The nice thing about in the virtual environment, content can be reused, right? Repurposed. If you have an interview like this, this later on could become an article. And that, again, you can repurpose it for many different ways. And yeah, you're right. The cold calling time may be not appropriate today, but certainly if you're still doing it, LinkedIn is still some sort of cold calling. But I think in LinkedIn, they're much easier in terms of introducing people, right? You can introduce people to another person. So I think that kind of shortened that entire prospecting cycle, if you will. Yeah. Questions for you in terms of the content. You mentioned about the snippets of the Social Security, Medicare. What would you recommend in terms of the niche for someone who is in the industry, coming into the industry? What would you recommend in terms of helping people focus on what the niche is and using that in terms of prospecting?
Sure. I think the best place to start for that is the existing client base, right? We've all started very broad, and then it's naturally narrowed itself down. And when we were first starting, it was, we'll talk to anybody that will talk to us and give us the time of day. And then it got narrowed down, and you naturally attracted a certain type of client. Certainly there's, you know, people that go after athletes and in different segments there. But I think if you start with your current client base and say, why do these individuals like doing business with me? And you start to ask those questions. And then if you're comfortable asking the client that question, right, some of these individuals have become very close friends of ours. You know, what is it that first made you want to do business with me? That's going to help uncover some of the, maybe the hidden aspects of it that you didn't realize were an attractive feature to that. And once you find out what those really good clients that you have and why they wanted to work with you, you can now replicate that and go look for that target group and provide educational content, like you said, YouTube and things like that, to where those types of clients are going to find that information, be attracted to it, and then reach out to you to have a conversation.
And thank you for reaffirming that. I always tell people that you don't necessarily create your niche. It's really the niche finds you. Right. And the best way to look at it is based on your current client base. And you're absolutely right. Same type of clients tend to, the clients that are, you know, you are attracted to, or they are attracted to a certain advisors, usually the chemicals was already there. Right. And I would assume that most advisors out there, their clients will simply say that we trust you, right? And I heard that a lot of times from my own clients. And it's not something that you could simply say, I wanted to do this niche. It's really sometimes your own understanding, your own personality, your own capability, you could actually find that through your client base. And but for someone who doesn't necessarily have a client base to start with, I would simply say that, you know, find out what you like. You know, some people have a certain hobbies. For example, I have a person told me yesterday that he likes to do woodworking. Mm-hmm. All right. So that potentially woodworking might be some common ground to begin with. So thank you so much for sharing the prospecting aspect of it. Have you ever run into difficulty in a virtual environment in terms of the prospecting, and how do you overcome that?
Certainly. I think if any advisor tells you that they don't have issues with prospecting, they're not being very truthful in that situation. Right. It's always difficult, because even if you think that they are willing to have the conversation virtually, there's sometimes some hesitancy that's not necessarily uncovered there. And so you have to work through some of those processes. But I think it's always a struggle, always building up the client base and going through the ebbs and the flows of, you know, you have, 15 appointments one week, then you have five the next week and back to 15 or 20 or whatever it may be. There's that natural ebb and flow of being an advisor that you just have to be okay with, right? It's kind of like the market. Right. You just have to be okay with the ups and downs, and know that they're going to happen. And so, I think that's a piece of it, but you have to push through. And I would say the one thing I'd add to that is, don't focus on the people that don't want to meet with you. Focus on the people right. that do want to meet with you. Because if you catch up on the people that don't want to be your clients or said, yeah, I'll do business with you, and then ghosted you, it will get very frustrating. But instead, focus on the people that do want to meet with you, that share your values, that appreciate what you're doing in providing them a service virtually, so that they don't have to go out and if they don't want to be exposed during the pandemic to that, think of storms and stuff like that. Find the people that you do want to serve and focus on them, not the people that don't want to work with you, because we cannot serve everybody.
Right. Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. I also remember that my mentor used to tell me that, you know, you really have to have the abundance mind. There's so many business for everyone, and really, you know, work with people who wants to work with you, and don't try to chase those people who it's just not a good fit. Right. And so it, but it does take some time to learn the craft of understanding the fit, and able to move forward on that. Well, thank you so much for sharing that wisdom. And we've gone through a lot of materials today, and I wanted to see if there's only one advice that you could provide to folks that are already in the industry or were planning to come through the industry. What would that be in terms of the virtual environment?
I think it's always be learning. And I think that sounds a little trite, but I think the best example is out there, right? Look for a better way to always improve. Look for a different way to do that. Know that the better way is out there. And now it's just your job to seek that out, right? Is there a better way to set up your background? Is there a better way to set up your lighting? How about systems and processes? Is there a better process for you to use for the client that makes them feel more engaged there? I think it is the active seeking of information or the active learning process that's important, because like you and I were talking before this conversation started, we've seen the changes, and we've seen them matriculate from in person to, you know, we joke maybe holograms into the future. And that might be the case, but we always have to say there's something better out there. We're always willing to learn and adapt, because I think the individuals that aren't adapting to the virtual setting at some point may get left behind. And especially for me, I have 20, 25 years maybe left in the business. And, you know, I have to be willing to adapt there. I can't just sit back and say I've figured it out, because I definitely have not figured it out.
Well, obviously we all have to stay agile in our business and be flexible and adapt. In not only the way we do business, but also the environment changes, and stay, what I usually said is put your antenna, even though antenna doesn't exist now, put your antenna up and then always be on the lookout, right, of what's going on, and be prepared, right, for doing that. Well, thank you so much for giving us some valuable advice here. Really appreciated your insight that we talked about, not only using the model from the Veterans Office in terms of the telemental services, apply those type of environment into the virtual environment of financial planning. We also talked about various different benefits and best practices, even down to the type of equipment that you should use. And be having an abundance mind in terms of having a good prospecting process in place. So thank you so much for your time today. We're so glad to have you for the Next Gen Mentoring Forum. It's an incredible informative session. So thank you. I also like to thank the California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program for sponsoring today's Next Gen Mentoring Forum. So California Lutheran University School of Management offers MBA in financial planning, helps financial advisors pursue a leadership position, grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning, effective client communication, and to streamline practice management. Please sign up for our info session for more information. Our next Gen Mentoring Forum session is going to be on April the 20th. At 1 p.m. Pacific time. Please join me to speak with a top psychologist in the country, Dr. Jason McCarley. He is going to share with us, can the robo-advisors actually help financial planning professionals? And thank you all, and we will see you at the next Gen Mentoring Forum on April 20th, 2021 at 1 p.m. And have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you.